Only 3 days out from Christmas, and tonight, AEW presented its holiday bash from the Greensboro Coliseum, a venue that has hosted a lot of classic professional wrestling over these many years. First four Starrcade events, including the very first one back in 1983, first ever Clash of the Champions show back in 88. Which featured Sting challenging for the World Heavyweight title in the main event. That was the night that Ric Flair made Sting. And they went to a 45-minute draw that night in that building. Sting was back in Greensboro tonight for the first time since 1994, teaming with Darby Allin and CM Punk in the main event against MJFTR, including one of the most horrifying moments of the year, where Sting nearly murdered MJF. It was a legitimately terrifying spot. It is a miracle that MJF did not break his neck in that main event. That was very scary. We also had an undisputably wise debut for Kyle O'Reilly tonight. He is officially All Elite. He was, in fact, the Christmas surprise that Adam Cole teased last week for the Young Bucks that he was going to have for them. He didn't say what it was going to be, but I told you what it was going to be. And sure enough, Santa delivered. We also have the date now set for the rematch for the AEW World Heavyweight title. Bryan Danielson will challenge Hangman Page again after their 60-minute draw at the Winter is Coming show. I think we all knew this was going to be a rematch. Tony Khan said as much. We just didn't know when. Battle of the Belt seemed likely, but Tony Khan has said Battle of the Belt is only an hour long. And there is only so much time for title matches on that show. In fact, we only know one title match so far that is even on that show on January 8th. But now we have one for January 5th. First Dynamite on TBS will feature Hangman defending against Bryan Danielson. And we have a lot of other stuff to get into as well here this week. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. I am the Solemn Monster. I do want to take a moment to wish everybody who is celebrating a very Merry Christmas later on this week, a very Happy New Year. This is the time of year where we wind down the wrestling year and get ready for 2022. This is the second to last, in fact, Dynamite review for this year. There is one more left. That's coming up next week. They're going to be back at Daly's Place in Jacksonville. So I want to thank you all for tuning in here and choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. Super chats are open. You'll see them popping up there by that little wreath right under me. I thought this was a really fun show tonight. Top to bottom, on the whole, I had a lot of fun. That main event, I thought, was a blast outside of that one really scary moment. It just felt like an old-school wrestling main event in an old-school venue. And Sting goes in there, and again, tag team matches, best way to utilize Sting. Sting goes in there because, remember, there was a moment a few weeks ago where they were teasing, it seemed like they were teasing a possible match between Sting and Tully Blanchard. And I was like, oh boy, they're going to give us a singles match in Greensboro, you know, with the old veterans from back in the day. We got a much better match tonight. Instead of Tully in the ring, Tully was, I don't know where Tully was, but maybe Tully was out there. I didn't see him. But Sting in a tag team match, Sting in a six-man tag, that's really the way to use him. He comes out, he still gets a giant reaction. He still moves around very well. You know, as the match wears on, clearly he tires out. But the man knows what he can do and what he can't do. He's smart about it, which he has to be because, you know, obviously he's got, you know, injury issues in the past. But I thought that him in Greensboro tonight was something the fans clearly wanted to see. They ate it up, the face paint, the whole deal, CM Punk coming out there dressed up as CM Sting. I enjoyed that main event. And so we will get into everything here as we get along. Do take a moment to like this video and hit that sub button if you have not already done so. And that way you will get all the notifications that you would get when I go live and I upload other things, other content. There's lots of it here on this channel. Lots more to come in 2022. We got a little coal in our stocking to open the show. Adam Cole one-on-one against Orange Cassidy. There was a sign in the crowd. I wish I would have clipped it. There was a sign in the crowd that said Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Yes. Yes, it is. It's actually one of my all-time favorite movies. That's funny, though. I just did a members-only video yesterday, and I literally just got done saying that again, that Die Hard is, in fact, a Christmas movie. And if you disagree, and if you believe otherwise, well, then you're wrong. So we had some silliness at the start. After that was out of the way, they actually wrestled. Cole hit a backstabber, and Orange Cassidy came back, hit a swinging DDT for a near fall. All of this stuff here at the beginning was just a backdrop to what was coming up a little bit later on at the end of this match. The Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler made their way out. Cassidy, he jumped. He had climbed up to the top rope. Brandon Cutler, he saw him coming down to the ring, so he decided to dive out onto Brandon Cutler, and he wiped him out. Best Friends were out next to take care of the Bucks. They brawled to the back. In all of the chaos, Adam Cole threw Orange Cassidy into the ring steps, shoulder first, not once but twice. And when Cole pulled down the knee pad, went charging in for the boom, Cassidy moved, and Cole went knee first right into the ring steps. And that led into our first commercial break. We come back from break. They were trading blows. Cole would throw a right hand. Cassidy would throw one of his weak kicks. Cole hit an Ushigaroshi. Went for another one. Cassidy turned it into a stunner, went up top, hit a diving DDT for a close near fall. Cole came back, set it for a Panama Sunrise, but Cassidy backed away, and when Cole came over, he schoolboyed him. Only got two. And then he hit a Michinoku driver for another near fall. Cassidy then he puts on the aviator shades, and he starts climbing up to the top rope. Puts his hands in his pockets like a fucking moron. And so what happened next? He ate a foot from Adam Cole. Adam Cole caught him with a super kick on the way down, deservedly so. Then he hit the Panama Sunrise. Does not win the match with the Panama Sunrise. I could feel my eye twitching a little bit when he kicked out of that move. But I accept it. Everybody kicks out of the Destroyers. Then he put his own hands in his tights. Adam Cole did. After he hit the move, he put his own hands in his tights to mock Orange Cassidy, gave a very lackadaisical cover, and Cassidy did kick out. Cole went to deliver the boom, but Cassidy dodged and hit the beach break for another close near fall. Cole knew that the orange punch was coming, and so he rolled out to the floor. All of a sudden, we see Bobby Fish is on his way down to the ring to distract the referee, and at that point, especially when the camera kind of, it really closed in a little bit on Orange Cassidy, so you couldn't see what was going on, because they kind of zoomed in on Cassidy a little bit, and the crowd started to make a little bit of noise, so you knew somebody was coming out there, or somebody had just appeared, you didn't know who, I mean, you knew who, but they weren't showing you, and all of a sudden, standing behind Orange Cassidy, we see Kyle O'Reilly, Von Wagner's former tag team partner. And he takes out Cassidy. Cole follows with the boom to the back of the head for the win. You know, the one bad thing about how this played out, it took forever for O'Reilly to show up. So I don't know if he was late on the queue. I don't know if he got his foot stuck when he was climbing out from underneath the ring. I don't know what went on there, but. And it was probably just 10 seconds extra. But they had a linger on Orange Cassidy, who had to stand there selling it and waiting and waiting and waiting. So they had to kind of stall for a little bit. O'Reilly jumped on Cassidy after the match. Cole pulled him off. And the two of them had a little bit of a tense stare down. Now, remember, the last time we saw these two together on TV was in NXT, and they were in the middle of a blood feud. So it kind of makes sense that there would be a little bit of tension between these two. Although it was Adam Cole who promised the Bucks that he had a big surprise for them. So it's not like it was a mystery to him that Kyle was coming in. But again, they teased a little bit of, you know, possible tension between the two of them. Best Friends ran down, so they turned their attention to them. And the heels beat them up. Fish and O'Reilly took out Trent with the high-low. And they all stood side by side. Now, the Bucks came back out, and they came into the ring, and they have this look on their face like they're surprised, they're disappointed, because Adam Cole did not clue them in about this, apparently. So the Bucks did not have happy looks on their faces, and Adam Cole is staring back at them. And again, this kind of played out for a little while. I almost, for a second there, I thought Cole was about to super kick O'Reilly. I said, please don't do that. We need Red Dragon. You cannot bring Kyle O'Reilly in and then immediately vault him into a singles babyface role when you have a Red Dragon reunion right there. All these great potential tag team matches, you got to go right into it. So they all stood side by side, and they ended up leaving together. The Bucks were left alone in the ring, and that is undisputed. You know, that had to be the easiest decision that that guy has ever made in his entire life. And maybe one day he'll talk about it, and maybe he'll say otherwise, and, you know, he'll say, well, you know, it was a really tough decision. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't, because he knew what I knew and what a lot of you know. Whatever word you want to use, which is that he had no future in NXT, and he had no future on the main roster in WWE. And already, you know, I posted something on Twitter a little bit earlier about him showing up, and okay, finally, O'Reilly is here, and already the WWE drones are coming out, Kyle O'Reilly, he's a jobber, nobody cares, blah, blah, blah. Of course, they would have been singing a very different tune had he re-signed with the company and showed up 1 week on SmackDown. So it's driving them nuts that he went to AEW. You had to figure it would be. But I will agree, you know, some people say, you know, the right role for him is in a tag team. And that's what I've been saying for weeks. Kyle O'Reilly could be a perfectly serviceable, you know, kind of middle of the card, singles, babyface, or heel, if you wanted him to be. But the right role for him right now is in a tag team. He and Fish, they complement each other. They work well together. They've worked, you know, many years together. And now they have this plethora of teams, some teams that they've wrestled before and many that they have not. You know, one of the strengths of AEW is their tag team division. They have tag teams that, you know, if anything, don't even get enough screen time, like a Santana and Ortiz or a Private Party. But think of all the teams now that Red Dragon could be matched up with. And now you have this story where they're seemingly, you know, aligned with Adam Cole. Undisputed Era is reunited. The band is back together. And what does that mean for the Elite? What does that mean for the Super Click now? Right now you've got a little bit of drama. You've got a little palace intrigue now that you can kind of build and play off of for the next several weeks, maybe even the next few months on television. Where does Adam Cole's allegiance lie? What do the Bucks think about all this? Can they coexist? Are they going to get along? Are they going to, you know, end up feuding against each other? I think, you know, to me, the story to tell, you take your time with it. And when Kenny Omega is ready to come back, you've got a ready-made battle right there between the Elite and the Undisputed Era, whatever you call them. The Elite and the UE. Now, I don't know if Kenny Omega is going to be back in time to do it at Revolution, which is the beginning of March. He might be. You could do it at Revolution. You can wait and build to something at Double or Nothing in May. That, to me, is the battle that you now build to. 3-on-3, Omega and the Bucks against Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly. And through that, you have a ready-made feud, singles feud, with Kenny Omega and Adam Cole. I mean, this could be the next 6 months of television with these guys, if they play their cards right. A lot of it depends on when Omega is going to come back. But like I said, for now we have a little bit of palace intrigue, and we'll see, you know, what they do with this. If they can keep it interesting for long enough for Omega to come back. So this is not a surprise that we saw Kyle on this show. I told you he was going to be on the show tonight. And like I said, easiest decision that this man could have ever made was coming to AEW and reforming Red Dragon, reuniting most of Undisputed Era. I mean, really, this is Undisputed Era. Roddy joined later on, and Roddy is trapped in WWE. He's not going anywhere. He re-signed a year ago, whatever it was. Originally, the Undisputed Era faction was Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. So again, you got the band back together. And Kyle O'Reilly is exactly where he needs to be. Tony Schiavone was in the ring wearing his ugly Christmas sweater to introduce Hangman Adam Page, the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Page is going to defend his title against Bryan Danielson on the very first episode of Dynamite on TBS, which is coming up on January 5th, only 2 weeks away. And Page said that after the 60-minute match with Danielson, he was handed back his championship because, obviously, he retained on a draw. And somehow, even though they handed the belt back to him, he never felt lower than he did that night. He never felt like less of a champion than he did that night when that match was over. Danielson walked out on the ramp and interrupted him. He called Hangman an entitled millennial cowboy, and he mocked him for being disappointed even though he was still the champion. He said that if anybody should be disappointed, it's the fans, because they know that I should be the AEW champion right now. He made an excuse that he hurt his leg in the match on TV with John Silver, and you know, maybe he wasn't 100% during their match. Otherwise, he would have won the title. He said that he wasn't going to make that mistake again. He would not be wrestling on Dynamite tonight. He would not be wrestling on Dynamite next week. He is not wrestling at all until January 5th. So he'll be 100% fresh and ready to go for the match. And he put a little spin on it, because we were wondering last week, what would the stipulation be? I was thinking maybe 2 out of 3 falls, you know, something like that, because you're not going to do another draw. But where do you go from here? What kind of match do these two have? Maybe they have a submission match, and Paige has 2 weeks to learn a new submission hold to use. They went a different way with it. And Danielson says that he's not going to make that mistake again, the mistake from last week where they went to a draw. He said they're going to have judges. He proposes having judges for their match on January 5th. So that if Paige tries to stall out again for 60 minutes like he did in their first match, there's going to be somebody there to decide on a winner. So it's just like what they did with Sting and Flair in Greensboro in 88 for their match. They had the celebrity judges. What was it? I think Jason Hervey was one of the judges from the Wonder Years. People, I already see people saying, this is stupid. Judges, they're going to decide the match. They're not going to decide the match. The point of doing this is that in the event that there is another draw, another time limit draw, which there will not be, in theory, it would go to the judges and they would render a decision on who they think wins the match. If the match doesn't go to a draw, the judges are useless. They're just there as, you know, guests to wave to the crowd. And they didn't say, by the way, who the judges would be. So they could have some fun with it and bring in some big names. They could bring in Bret Hart to be a judge. I mean, they could bring in anybody they want. They could bring in Johnny Gargano to be a judge. He's not officially at AEW, but Shay, we want him in here as a judge, right? They could bring in anybody they want. But the judges will not factor into the match unless it goes to a draw. Again, I think there are people who are newer fans who, you know, they didn't see old matches that had judges like that. And so they hear judges, they think, boy, that's stupid. I'm going to grade this match on points. No, the match is not going to a time limit draw, so it doesn't matter. It's all part of the gimmick. So Paige said that he was thinking all week long about what kind of match they could have. Maybe a cage match, maybe an inferno match, you know, no time limit match. But if he wants to have judges, he says that's fine. Told Brian that he's worked too hard to have some old prick tell him that he wasn't good enough, so he better pay his judges well in advance because they will not be needed. And as I just said, they will not be needed. That is correct. So I thought this was a good segment. Again, the rematch, we all knew the rematch was coming. We just didn't know if it would be on the 5th, if it was going to be on the 8th. If the 8th is an hour long, makes sense. You know, this may not go an hour, but they'll probably give these guys another 20 minutes or so. And it's a big main event. You know, you want to pop a big number for that first TBS show, get people to migrate over to the new network. It's going to be a learning curve for people. It was the same way when, you know, SmackDown moved to Fox, and when SmackDown gets bumped sometimes to FS1, the number is so much lower. You can, no matter how many times you repeat it on television or you put it on Twitter, there are going to be people on January 5th who put TNT on, Creatures of Habit, at 8 o'clock, and they're going to be wondering where the fuck is AEW, even though they've been hammering it home for weeks. It's not going to matter. So I don't even know that the first week number is going to matter. Week 2, week 3, week 4, I'm very curious to see where they land. This whole thing about the West Coast being live and how that's negatively affecting their rating, I don't believe that that's going to be the case on TBS. So if that's the case, then theoretically the numbers should jump up. Plus, TBS is in more homes than TNT. I don't know if they're going to get back to a point where they're over a million on average every single week. I mean, they were in a good groove for a while where they were doing a million, 1.1, 1.2 million, and then they got bumped for baseball back-to-back weeks, and they have not been able to hit that mark since. But now they're going to a totally new network. You want a big main event on night one? You don't get any bigger than that. World title on the line? That's a pretty big main event. So I think it's smart. We went backstage. MJF was in the back with the Pinnacle. And Wardlow was sitting there, and he thanks Spears for being a good accountability buddy for Wardlow last week. He asked Wardlow, "I pay you a ton of money to protect me, right?" And he was talking about, you know, the champagne that he had told Wardlow to get, and he should have gotten it earlier. Just needling the guy. Again, taking their time. We all know where this is going. They've been building this up for a long time. When Wardlow finally snaps, he's going to blow a gasket. But then he focused on CM Punk, and he said he and FTR, they're a family. Punk knows nothing about family. Dax Harwood said they don't have a problem with Punk. They didn't have a problem before. Now they do, but they didn't have a problem with Punk. But he's always going to back up his family. Pinnacle is family. When you're the Pinnacle, you're always on top. Speaking of Wardlow, we had Wardlow in action next with Sean Spears in his corner. He told us that Wardlow is on a 14-match win streak against everybody that he's been mowing down over the last few months. Tonight, his victim was Captain Sean Dean, and the good captain went down. Immediate powerbomb, followed by a second powerbomb, followed by a third powerbomb, followed by a fourth powerbomb, and at that point, he was satisfied with the damage, put his boot on his chest, and finished the match. Sean Spears got into the ring, hit Dean with a chair, and that was that. So the march to the Wardlow babyface turn continues. The fans are already cheering for him whenever he does the power bombs. They don't give a shit about the person he's power bombing. They keep saying one more time. We had Dan Lambert appeared up in one of the luxury boxes with Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. And he started ranting like a madman, like he always does. You know, the thing about him, though, I think the thing that annoys me about Lambert, he's good, but it's like there's no pause in what he's saying. He knows he has to get his shit in. He says it. He doesn't take a breath. He doesn't really stop. You don't really have time to absorb it. And then it's just over and on to the next segment. The guy just, he's always on. He doesn't stop. So he was ranting here about, I don't know, he said something about Shakespeare and the crowd can't possibly understand that. All wrestling fans think about is turning off the lights in their parents' basement. Okay. Lambert said he runs the most successful MMA gym in the world based on merit. Unlike Tony Khan, who is the exact opposite. He goes, if you're his friend, you're an EVP. And you get all the opportunities and you get all the title shots. If not, you're relegated to opening match status on the card. He pointed out that Scorpio Sky was one half of the first AEW Tag Team Champions. He pointed out that he had beaten Chris Jericho on two different occasions, and yet he doesn't get an opportunity. Meanwhile, Cody Rhodes gets yet another title match on Rampage, which he does this weekend. Lambert said that he himself was also treated unfairly, because he was put in an impossible situation last week to try to get people to cheer for Cody Rhodes, which is what I talked about here on the stream. I said the entire purpose of putting Dan Lambert last week on TV in the same segment with Cody Rhodes was to try to get Cody Rhodes cheered. It did not work. And so he pointed it out here. He said he doesn't care if it's Sammy. Actually, he also said, he goes, just to pile on Cody, he said that he's an even bigger dick than I am. Everyone's picking on Cody Rhodes. It's amazing. So he said he doesn't care if it's Sammy or Cody in their TNT title match, whoever wins. His guys get the next shot, and that way they can bring the belt to American Top Team. They cut backstage to Tony Schiavone interviewing Britt Baker. They had advertised a Tony Schiavone Britt Baker Christmas party on this show. It wasn't really much of a Christmas party. It was just Tony Schiavone in the back interviewing Britt Baker. And she was sitting down in a chair with Jamie Hayter, Rebel standing beside her. She called herself a pillar of the company, one of the pillars of AEW. She said Riho comes around whenever she wants and gets a title shot. So she was cutting a promo on Riho. That's the only match so far that has been announced for the Battle of the Belts on January 8th, is Riho challenging Britt Baker for the women's title. She told Riho to be careful because she would, or Riho could shoot her eye out, which I'm sure is a reference to something. I don't know what, but that was the promo. And then we had one of the best parts of the entire show. We had a video package dedicated to the late Owen Hart. And Tony Khan had said that they had obtained the rights to footage of Owen from New Japan Pro Wrestling through their contact with Rocky Romero. Rocky Romero helped facilitate that deal. And so what they had here was they had footage of Owen pre-WWE from when he was in New Japan, interspersed with some testimonials and stories from some of their own talent. And I think I got all the names down here. They had Adam Cole said a few words, Matt Hardy, Mark Henry, who was very close with Owen. They were in the Nation together, in fact. 2.0, Eddie Kingston, Dustin Rhodes, who would have also known Owen well from their time in WWE, and Sean Spears. They were just talking about Owen as a performer, Owen as a person, as a family man. They had home family footage. Obviously, Martha supplied the footage of Owen. And I think it was a lot of the same footage we saw in the Dark Side of the Ring episode. So it was really just a nice video. They did mention what we already knew, which is that there's going to be two tournaments, a men's and a women's Owen Cup next year. It's going to begin in 2022. They didn't say when, but they said that it will culminate with the finals for both tournaments at Double or Nothing. We know that Martha will be there to present the cup, the trophy, to the winners at Double or Nothing in May. We don't yet know the format of the tournament. I was talking about this on Sunday on the podcast. You know, we don't know if it's going to be single elimination format. We don't know if it's going to be round robin style. You know, it could be like a G1-style tournament. You know, we don't know. So we don't have all the details yet. But I am very much looking forward to this tournament. I'm sure there are a lot of people in this company who are going to be lobbying and politicking for a spot in that tournament on either side. And look, any way to honor Owen Hart is fine with me. Owen was great. Doesn't get talked about a lot because it's been so long since he died. I mean, there's a lot of fans today who don't know who he is. Were it not for stuff like this, you would say Owen Hart, and some of them just would not know who he is. They might barely know who Brett is. You know, a lot of us who have been fans for a long time and have been watching since the 80s or the 90s, some of you may have been watching since the 70s, you know, I think it's easy to forget sometimes how much time has gone by and how different wrestling is today. It's like a lifetime ago. You think back to the wrestling business and the product that we used to watch and everything and how different it is today than it was then. So I remember that, you know, what happened there like it was yesterday. But for the people who don't really know much about Owen, I think it's very cool that they're going to honor him in some way. And if it becomes an annual thing, which I think is the plan, and the family is going to be involved, I think that's a very nice thing. We had Ruby Soho one-on-one against Nyla Rose, semifinal match in the TBS title tournament. There was a very... I'm shutting my phone up here. My phone is talking to me here. There was a very dumb sign in the crowd that got on camera during Nyla's entrance. It was brief, but it did get shown on TV. I believe from what I saw on Twitter, that person, I believe, was ejected from the building, as they should have been. If you bring a sign like that to the show, first of all, you're a fucking idiot. That's number one. And number two, you're going to get thrown out. You go into it with the expectation that you will be thrown out of the building. Which, again, I believe is what happened here, and deservedly so, and that's all the attention I'm going to give to that person. Before the bell, Nyla attacked Ruby. Ruby got her hand. She couldn't get her hand out of her jacket sleeve. So Nyla had to yank and pull and try to, you know, finally help her get her hand out, which was a little embarrassing. Kind of reminded me, the first thing I thought of, there was an episode of Raw back in 2000. I believe it was in 2000. And actually, I think I can actually pinpoint the night. I think it was the night after The Undertaker debuted as the American Badass. And he came out again on Raw the next night and chased away Vince McMahon and all the heels. And it was Rock and Triple H in the ring, and Rock laid out Triple H. I think he gave him a rock bottom through the announce desk. And as Rock is trying to take off, you know, his $5,000 silk shirt that he used to wear back then, he couldn't get his hand out of the sleeve. He was struggling. He was trying as hard as he could to try to pull his fucking hand out, and he couldn't do it. And it took like 30 seconds, and finally he pulled it out. I'm just thinking, man, if you are that wrestler in that situation, and you're on live TV, and all eyes are on you, and the camera's on you, and you can't get your hand out of the sleeve, what must be going through your head? Probably a lot of four-letter words, I would imagine. So anyway, they ended up out on the floor, and when Ruby charged in Nyla, Nyla moved out of the way. Ruby crashed into the ring steps as they were heading into the picture-in-picture break. Back from the commercial, Ruby got a DDT for a near fall. Nyla went outside, pulled out a chair from under the ring, which is a pretty stupid thing to do in the middle of a tournament match. I mean, I know this company doesn't do a lot of DQs, but that was pretty fucking dumb. Ruby came off the apron with a running drop kick, sent the chair back into Nyla's face, which would not be a disqualification since Nyla is the one who introduced the weapon and they were on the floor. So there was a spot where Vicky Guerrero shoved Ruby off the top rope. That allowed Nyla to hit her diving knee strike with Ruby draped over the top rope. She went for the pin, only got two. Ruby at that point started selling a shoulder injury. She was selling it so well, I thought maybe she was really hurt. She was selling the shit out of that shoulder. And the announcers wisely pointed out that Ruby has a history of shoulder surgery. And I was actually glad that they mentioned that. She actually had double shoulder surgery. She had one shoulder surgery. When she healed up from that, she had the other one. I've told that story before. Back at WWE, you know, she was told that she had, I think, torn rotator cuffs in both shoulders and wrestled on them for 10 years and didn't even know it. And eventually the damage just got so great, she had no choice but to have surgery. So I like that they pointed that out. Ruby locked on a standing dragon sleeper. Nyla was waving, not tapping as one of the announcers thought she was. She was waving at Vicky to get up on the apron. Ruby went over and knocked Vicky off the apron, then walked right into a powerbomb by Nyla for two. Excalibur called it a beast bomb. I thought the beast bomb was a sit-out powerbomb. This was not a sit-out powerbomb. So if I am correct, that was not a beast bomb. Nyla grabbed Ruby's arm and climbed up to the middle rope on the inside. Ruby yanked her off, and as Nyla came off, Ruby caught her with the no future kick to the head on the way down, covered Nyla for the win. This match was not of the quality of some of the other tournament matches that we've seen so far. It was okay. Ruby meets the winner of the final semifinal match next week between Thunder Rosa and Jade Cargill. That's next week at their New Year's Smash show. So I'm thinking we get Ruby against Jade in the finals. I mean, realistically, any of these three could win this tournament. So I like that. I like the fact that you can make the case any of these three women could predictably win. It's not that obvious who the winner is going to be. I know a lot of people, oh, Jade's going to win. It's designed for Jade. I think that would be a mistake. Jade is great. I've praised Jade, and I think Jade's going to go on to become a big star one day, but Jade's not there yet. And I also think it would be dumb. You already have one heel as the women's champion. Why have another heel win this title? You want to balance things out. Give people something to cheer for. Give them a babyface champion. You can't go wrong with Thunder Rosa or Ruby Soho, but I think it's going to be Ruby. I think Ruby goes on to win the entire thing. We had Malakai Black, who has the best entrance in all of professional wrestling. That music is so perfect for him. One-on-one against Griff Garrison, who looks like he came right out of a fucking Saved by the Bell episode. Right as the bell rang, Garrison charged in. Malakai, though, kicked him. Down goes Griff Garrison. And Malakai went out to the floor to start arguing and talking shit to Brian Pillman Jr. Garrison, though, once he recovered, he hit a suicide dive, knocked down Malakai Black. Back inside, they traded strikes. Malakai tripped up Griff, applied a knee bar, what looked like a knee bar. Garrison got to the ropes. Black got up, and he starts throwing a series of leg kicks. This guy's very proficient when it comes to the kicks. You don't want to get in a kicking match with this guy. Garrison made a comeback and tossed Malakai neck first into the second rope. Hit a big rolling elbow. That was his big spot of the match. Got a near fall out of it. Malakai avoided a suplex attempt, hit another leg kick, and then a rising knee strike. And then, and I like this, instead of going for the obvious, the black mass, whatever they call it now, he used a different move. He used a submission hold. He grabbed the leg, he turned him over, and he wrenched back on this one leg crab, the single leg crab. Griff tapped out. And the reason they did that is because he was saving the kick for Brian Pillman Jr. when the match was over. He wouldn't release the hold. So Pillman gets into the ring, and he ends up eating the spinning heel kick, and down goes Pillman. And that was it. And then they quickly moved on to the next segment. So this did not need to go long. This was exactly what it needed to be. You know, he decisively beats Griff Garrison. I mean, it's comical to think that it would have gone any other way. But that we didn't get any kind of advancement in the whole House of Black story. There were no new vignettes. There was no tease of anything. We still don't know where Julia Hart is. I mean, she was misted. Is she fucking blind now? I mean, does she have eye patches over each eye? I don't know. She wasn't there. But this was what it needed to be. And then we got to the main event, which I thought was a lot of fun. CM Punk, Sting, and Darby Allin against MJFTR was your trios match main event. Sting was out there wearing a CM Punk t-shirt and some pretty badass-looking CM Punk face paint. He had the red lightning bolts under each eye. He had the taped fists. You know, the design from his t-shirt. Whoever did the makeup did a hell of a job. I mean, Sting does a lot of his own face paint. I don't know if he did this himself or not. But it looked awesome. I thought it looked great. Darby had half his face painted pink. And Punk came out dressed like Surfer Sting. without the crop top. He had red boots. He had these long black tights. With a giant scorpion on the side. He had the old Surfer Sting-like face paint. So I actually thought that was really cool, having them come out with all the paint like that. MJF tagged out right away to Dax Harwood instead of facing off with Punk, and Tony Schiavone lost his mind. When MJF bailed out to the floor, Tony went off on him, called him a spineless piece of shit. You know, he's enjoying the freedom that he now has that he wouldn't have had 20 or 25 years ago to say these things on TV. Tony doesn't care. Tony has always had a potty mouth. He just wasn't allowed to go on Nitro and call people a spineless piece of shit. But now he does it every week. Punk and Dax Harwood, they were trading slaps, and Punk quickly gained the advantage, tagged in Darby, and MJF tagged in. Once Punk, though, re-entered, MJF again bailed. Didn't want to have anything to do with CM Punk. Sting tagged in for the first time. Big pop. And he was working over Cash's arm before going for the Scorpion Deathlock, but he quickly rolled out to escape. He did not want any part of the Scorpion Deathlock. So we had Sting and MJF. They were in the ring for a little bit. And They were trying to get to their corners. Sting took MJF down with a clothesline. MJF, when Punk tags in again, and again MJF flees. And Punk goes after him this time. And then the chase was on. Punk was in hot pursuit of MJF. MJF made a beeline up the stairs into, I guess, the mezzanine level somewhere. And then they disappeared onto the concourse somewhere. And then on an adjacent staircase, here comes MJF back down. And Punk is coming after him. Punk got a good cardio workout chasing after this fucker here in this segment. Eventually, Punk is outside the ring. And MJF is over with FTR. So now Punk, they're all out on the floor. He's outnumbered 3-1. You can see Darby in the ring getting ready. Darby is getting ready to launch. And he launches himself through the ropes with that great fucking dive that he does. Believably took out all three members of the Pinnacle. I know Darby is not a big man, but when he launches himself like that, it's not hard to believe that, you know, he could take three men out all at once. So they go to a break, come back. Darby, right out of the break, Darby gets dumped out by one of the members of FTR. I think it was Harwood. Over the top rope. And as he's coming out over the top rope, he bounced face first off the apron. That did not look fun. And that was not even the scariest part of the match. Heels took turns working over Darby for the next few minutes, playing with their food, as Excalibur said. I like that line. I like that line. Darby got an opening, though, tagged out to Sting. Stinger splash to Cash. Stinger splash to Harwood. Darby got in on the fun with a coffin splash in the corner, and then Punk followed with a rising knee strike, a running rising knee. We got another Stinger splash, this one to both members of FTR at the same time. Sting locked on the Scorpion Deathlock on Dax. MJF, though, broke it up, and they took one last picture-in-picture break. Come back. Cash had Sting in an abdominal stretch. MJF tagged in. Sting took him down. And then Sting did the spot. And we've seen Sting do this, you know, a number of times before, where he's kind of wobbly on his feet and slowly does the face, you know, the face plant down right onto MJF's crotch. Or as Taz so eloquently put it, the yam bags. I'm going to miss Taz, by the way. It'll be good to see JR. And I know, you know, he's been having these radiation treatments for his cancer and hopefully everything is going well. But I am going to miss Taz on commentary. So then CM Sting hot tagged in, ran wild on FTR, including a suicide dive of his own out onto Dax. Punk goes up, diving crossbody onto Cash Wheeler. He set up for the GTS. Cash, though, held onto the top rope, and Dax blind tagged himself in. Punk got a neck breaker, only good for two. Punk headed back up to the top, though. Dax crotched him. Climbed up, FTR hit the Powerplex combo. I love that fucking move. Hits the Powerplex combo. Punk kicked out. And at that point, the crowd reacted to something, and the camera very quickly cut to the timekeeper's table, which was overturned. We didn't see anybody. And then they cut back to the ring. So now I'm thinking, did a fan try to climb over and he fell on his fucking ass? Like, what, you know, what happened here? But we end up seeing MJF kind of peeked his head up from over the table because he had disappeared for a few minutes in this match. The announcers were wondering where he was. And so he was obviously hiding over by the timekeeper's table. We saw Darby on the ground and we saw MJF hiding over by the desk. In the ring, Punk went for a GTS, though, got countered into the big rig by FTR. Sting broke up the pin. MJF hit a DDT to Sting. Sting then no-sold the DDT. We saw Sting no-sell a powerbomb through a table a few months ago by 2.0. Here he sold a no-sold the DDT. And he got right back up, and then came the scariest moment of the night. Sting has MJF. And he goes to hip toss him over the top rope. FTR is on the outside. They're going to catch MJF. Well, that was the idea. And Sting hip tosses this guy over the top rope. MJF goes flying. FTR kind of catches him, but the way that he launched young Maxwell here, he landed straight down on his fucking head. And he not only landed straight down on his head, but right on the part of the ground where the mats ended. And you had concrete right in front of where the railing is. I mean, he landed head first. And it looked like maybe he got his hands under to kind of cushion the blow. This was legitimately fucking terrifying to watch, because I watched that and I'm thinking, okay, I'm watching to make sure that he moves. And credit to Cash Wheeler, because he went right over to MJF, you know, crawled right over to him to make sure he was okay. And somehow he was. He got very, very lucky, because that could have gone, you know, look, we think of Sting's last match in WWE and what happened with Seth Rollins, right? Accidents happen, shit happens, and that could be it. The only difference is Sting is 60 years old. MJF is just first blossoming into, you know, whatever big star he's going to be. He's not even nearly as big as he'll be eventually. That's the kind of spot that if that goes a different way, his career could be over. So that was very scary. As people are checking on him to make sure that he's still alive and can move his limbs, Sting is climbing up to the top rope and trying to steady himself. And now I'm thinking, oh my God, this guy almost fucking died. Please don't die. He jumps off, crossbody, out onto all the heels. And that goes well, thankfully. Back inside, Dax Harwood took the bullet for MJF. He shoved him out of harm's way. And he took the GTS from Punk. He took a Scorpion Death Drop from Sting. He took a Coffin Drop halfway across the ring. Got some distance on that, and he wins it for the babyface team. MJF was kind of crawling back up the ramp. He went over to where the announcers are and grabbed one of the headsets and was yelling into it. He was screaming, and he was saying, you see, he was running. He was talking about Punk running like a coward, running like a bitch. I was just happy the guy was okay. I wasn't even really paying too much attention to what he was actually saying. I know he's a prick and all, but, you know. I want the guy to not be in a wheelchair. So I thought that the main event outside of that one moment there was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was cool, you know, Sting and Punk for the first time as tag team partners as like a novelty thing one time. I thought that was very cool. And on the whole, I thought this was a very enjoyable episode of Dynamite. So the Holiday Bash is going to continue. It's going to continue on Christmas night. They're going to have a Saturday episode of Rampage at 9 p.m. There is no Rampage on Friday night this week. It is at 9 p.m. on Saturday. I will not be streaming on Friday or Saturday. Just a little programming note. I'll have my Rampage thoughts on the podcast on Sunday. But, you know, SmackDown was already taped last week. There's three matches on the show. I'm not streaming for that either, so. All that stuff we'll talk about on 7:36 on Sunday. But on Rampage, Cody Rhodes challenges Sammy Guevara for the TNT title. Jungle Boy faces Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. Matt Hardy, they had a Matt Hardy promo on the show to talk about Isaiah Cassidy's match. And Matt Hardy said that Isaiah Cassidy, and I quote, is going to pound Jungle Boy's ass on Christmas. Which I'm sure is news to Anna Jay. Jungle Boy, in his promo, said that he was going to, and I quote, shove a lump of coal up Isaiah Cassidy's ass on Christmas Day. I could do without all the ass play. Hook is back on Rampage, one-on-one against Bear Bronson. And legit Layla Hirsch faces Chris Statlander. So that's on Saturday. Now, next Wednesday is the final Dynamite of the year. They're going to be back at Daly's Place in Jacksonville. Jim Ross is going to be back on commentary. When they put his picture up on the screen, he got a big pop in Greensboro. So he will be on the show next week. Eddie Kingston tags with Santana and Ortiz to take on Daniel Garcia. And 2.0, Thunder Rosa takes on Jade Cargill in the TBS title tournament. And Orange Cassidy and Best Friends take on Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. And so those are your lineups. And that is their New Year's Smash show next week. The final Dynamite on TNT is coming up next Wednesday. Let's go to the poll. and see what you guys thought of the AEW Holiday Bash. Seems like you guys were a big fan of the show. We look at this here. 90% thumbs up. Only 9% thumbs down. At Solomonster, by the way, for those of you wondering, where can I vote in these polls? That would be at Solomonster on Twitter. And I also want to give a quick plug here for those who may have missed it. If you are a channel member here on YouTube, regardless of what tier you are on, if you are on the top tier, the Legends tier, or the main Superstars tier, there is a brand new members-only Q&A video that I posted yesterday answering your questions. Quick turnaround, too. I put the thread up. Next day, boom, video done. An hour long answering your questions. And I got a little teaser clip of one of those questions from the members-only Q&A this week. Josh B., outside of Okada, which wrestler from any promotion had the best title defenses in a single championship run? I think Kenny Omega's AEW title reign deserves recognition. He had a lot of great matches in and out of AEW. But even if you just focus on the AEW title, which I guess he did defend outside. I mean, I know he had the Impact title as well. But if you look at the totality of his run, I still don't think he gets enough credit because there's a lot of people that just don't like the guy. I think Omega deserves recognition. I think John Cena's U.S. title run when he was doing all the open challenges before everybody started doing open challenges. I mean, now it's ridiculous in both companies. But the John Cena U.S. title open challenge stuff after WrestleMania 31, I thought was very strong. And I would say Asuka when she was the NXT Women's Champion. So again, if you would like to become a channel member, you may do so. Every video, including this one, should have a white join button under the video. And that's one of the perks that you get are these pop-up members-only Q&As. We have some other features. We're going to be doing a pilot episode of a new call-in show, Better Call Saul. Better Call Solomonster. We'll be doing that probably within the next week, maybe in the next few days. And that'll be for channel members as well. So check that out. It's almost an hour long if you missed it, and that is for our Sound Off Channel family. And now we come to our Sound Off family here on the Super Chat portion, where we hang out and have a little Super Chat party. Here on the streams, getting cold in here. All the snow falling around here. My goodness. Which is weird that there's snow falling, given that it's been fucking 60 degrees outside. But we got snow here tonight. Let it snow, let it snow. I am the snow king here tonight. So let's see what questions and comments that you guys have. I will read all of them here. And I want to thank Nayef Al-Safar for his super chat love, and not only tonight but all throughout the year. Nayef is always a part of these streams and supports the main podcast every Sunday, the full shows that I do. For those of you who are YouTube only and have no idea, there is a main podcast every Sunday on all the usual podcast platforms that you can listen to. C Moonsault with the $1.99, did you see Darby Allin, Cora Jade drama on Twitter? I did, and they quickly deleted their tweets, and so I think it's much ado about nothing. Although Darby's comment was dumb. I don't know, why are you picking on Cora Jade? Cora Jade didn't do nothing wrong. But they deleted their tweet. The old tweet and delete. So, not much else to say about that. Tuxedo T Servo, $10 Super Chat, the unquestioned... what? Is an AEW, that undisputed chant, had to feel good for those guys. Merry Christmas, Solomonster. Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it was... It felt good, I'm sure, to get the band back together. Jay Bentley, go ahead and send one. If the chat doesn't go too quickly, I'm happy to answer it. I usually go back and forth between both. So go for it if you got a question. Food Hive with the $9.99 at work. Gotta miss the stream tonight, but I have Dynamite playing at the bar at my job. What job do you have? Where? Well, don't tell me where, but I know what job you have. We're all watching Sting, and I think I pulled in some new viewers. Hope all is well with everyone in the chat. Happy holidays to you, Food Hive. Stephen Chaffa, look at this. Dropping $50. Here is an early Merry Christmas to you, brother. Happy holidays, Solomonster. Well, happy holidays to you too, Stephen, and a happy new year. I hope that you get all of the gifts that you are looking for. Stephen Fee, hey, Chris Manson, go take a shower. Stephen Feast with a $5 super chat. The last few years of AEW NXT have given me as much excitement and memories as 1997 to 2001 WWF. Are we in another golden age or am I in the minority here? Anaxial Gonzalez, thank you for the sub. Asuka, thanks you. I mean, Stephen, look. Golden age can be defined a lot of different ways. Golden age business-wise, golden age in terms of wrestling. We're getting better quality, like, matches now than we did back then. But in terms of, overall enjoyment and in terms of all that kind of stuff, it's a subjective thing. I would say that if you are someone who is looking for a wide variety of wrestling with a lot of different promotions, we are in a very good period right now. Because if you don't like WWE, you've got AEW. If you don't like AEW, you've got other promotions. I mean, Ring of Honor went dark, but, you know, there are smaller promotions out there. There are MLW, you know, promotions like MLW. There's a lot of independents now that are streaming on Fight TV who actually have television exposure where you can, you know, go on your computer and watch them, whereas before there was no platform for that. So the amount of independent promotions out there are endless. I mean, that list is as long as it's ever been. In this country, in the UK, and other places in the world, if you might be more in tune with the New Japan product. New Japan Pro Wrestling, All Japan Pro Wrestling Noah, Stardom. You know, maybe the Mexican promotions, AAA, CMLL. You've got a lot of options out there. There's a lot of really, really, really good wrestling out there. I can't compare the two periods because they're just that period of time was fun. It was like a party atmosphere. Wrestling is not like that anymore. I enjoy wrestling, but in a different way. If you're asking me, though, personally to compare it to then, I don't make that comparison like you do. But it is a fun time to be a fan. There is a lot of options out there for you. If you don't like one thing, there's always something else. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha, with the $8 super chat. Hey, Solomonster, what is good, brother? On an impact rating level, rate how hard Darby Allin launches himself. Oh, about, I'd say about a 12. He doesn't give a shit about his own well-being. That's kind of why it looks so good. Jay Bentley wants to know, do you think MJF will ever go to the WWE? If so, could you see him being a big star? I don't see him going to WWE. If he was to go, I mean, if they had a brain in their head, of course, he'd be one of the biggest stars in the company. But look what we're talking about here. I mean, look at how they book some of the people that they book in this company. We had people coming in who should have been a sure thing. Keith Lee, among others, and look what happened to them. So I have no idea how things would go with MJF and WWE. I know one thing, he wouldn't be allowed to be the MJF that we see now. It would be a toned-down version of MJF. That's not a version of MJF I want to see. I think he is going to stay right where he is for the foreseeable future. And by foreseeable future, I mean at least the next 5 years. Because when his deal is up in a couple of years, I think he's staying right where he is. Yukio Rules, thank you for the $30 super chat. I appreciate that. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, Solomonster. Thank you for everything you do. Well, thank you, Yukio Rules. I do what I do for you. Yukio Rules. Quintus Brown, $5 super chat. Another dope show tonight. Elite against Undisputed Elite feud is going to be epic. Texas Aggie, $12.99. Merry Christmas, Solomonster, and God bless. Merry Christmas to you too, my friend. Jared M., a channel member here for 8 months. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yep, I got 8 of them. 8 months. Says, Sting against Flair at Clash 1. The judges were Jason Hervey, Ken Osmond, Sandy Scott, and Penthouse model Patty Mullen. Well, boy, does that bring the celebrity scale down quite a bit. I thought we had some real celebrities. I couldn't remember who the other ones were, but... Jared, thank you for the $25 Hardy Monster Super Chat. Yes. I feel like Inception going on here. Soloception. Thank you, Jared. And a very happy new year to you, my friend. Chris Manson wants to know, have I been naughty this year? I'm always naughty. Let's see. Jacob Donnelly. Jacob. $10 Super Chat. Do you think this current run for Sting deserves to be talked about as one of the best comeback runs in recent memory? Given his age and his injuries, he says, I absolutely think so. I think that it has been a lot of fun seeing Sting be able to come back and do the things that he has done. I was very concerned when, you know, he came in and the idea was we're going to put him in the ring because I wasn't sure what to expect and I didn't want to see anything bad. I just remember watching that pay-per-view when he got hurt against Rollins and I just felt like shit when it was over. I said, man, you know, he was on this, he was having a really good match against him that night too. And then that happened and then reality kind of smacks you in the face and it's like, you know what, this guy, yeah, maybe he shouldn't be in the ring anymore. He's old and, you know, I hate that that happened to him and everything, and it was a horrible way for him to go out. You know, even though he went out in a title match and he came back for the finish, you know, he finished the match, but I didn't want to see something like that happen to him again. And I don't know if it's just that he's just smarter about what he does or, you know, years have gone by and maybe he's healed up and maybe physically he's in better shape than he was, you know, when that match was over that night. Whatever it is, they did the cinematic match. He's been back in the ring a few times and he's doing dives. I mean, the people are there to protect him and to catch him, but I think it's been a lot of fun, and he seems to be having a lot of fun out there. And I think the people that he works with, CM Punk looked like a fucking kid on Halloween tonight dressed up like Sting, but he had this big cheesy smile on his face because he's tagging with Sting in Greensboro. You know, Punk's an old school guy. I'm sure for him it was like a dream fulfilled tonight. So, yeah, it's been a fun comeback run for him. I've enjoyed it a lot. Every Sting match you see, you never know if it could be his last. You know, one day he's going to turn around and say, you know what, I think I'm done. So that's why if you buy a ticket to go to a show and Sting is going to be wrestling, it still feels special. It still feels like an attraction. Temjin Zephyr, channel member for 6 months here on YouTube. Feliz Navidad, Sala Monster. And chat. What is your favorite finishing move that was countered moment? Well, it wasn't really a finishing move that was countered, but I you say countered, I immediately thought of the Shelton Benjamin dive into the super kick by Shawn Michaels. I know that's a completely different question that you asked, but I'm going to give you that as my answer just because I thought that was a fucking great spot. Anyway, Jacob, thank you for the question. DHV smoking trees. He's smoking those Christmas trees. $5 super chat. Wanted to super chat my favorite channel. However, they're not live right now, so I'll give it to you in style, you bastard. You son of a bitch. Thank you anyway. You got me there. Rodimus Prime, $5 super chat. AEW is undisputed. Joseph Brooks, $4.99. Buy or sell on who had the better first title reign, Batista or John Cena? Also, today is my birthday. I'm getting pretty old. I am 26. Well, if you're feeling old at 26, then what does that make me? Better first title reign, Batista or John Cena? I would say... That's a good question. Cena had that belt for a while, didn't he? He held that championship for a while. I think I'd probably go with Cena. I feel like Batista lost it and then he won it back and lost it and won it back. I mean, I know Cena eventually did also, but I remember really enjoying the second match that Cena had with JBL, the one where he was all bloodied. I think it was Judgment Day 05. That was much better than their WrestleMania match. And then he wrestled Jericho, I remember, at SummerSlam. But I'm trying to remember if the stuff with Umaga came at the Rumble in 06, because I really enjoyed that match. That was the last man standing match. I think it was, right? Not 07. I think it was 06. I'm going to go with Cena. Yeah, Casey, you know, that probably gets my vote too. He, to go back to the question that he asked me before about a finisher that was countered, Seth Rollins going for the curb stomp at WrestleMania and being vaulted into the air by Randy Orton into an RKO. That was a fucking great spot. That might get my vote. Was it 07? Okay, everyone's telling me it was 2007 for the I Quit match. I assume that was not part of Cena's first title run at that point. He was probably on his second one by then, right? Griga, Feliz Navidad. Thank you for the $2. Feliz Navidad to you as well. Or Feliz Cumpleaños. I don't know if it's your birthday or not, but I guess I just wished you a happy birthday. Team 4, I got to work on my Spanish here. Team 4wood, Tony will one day get destroyed by Adam Cole. He keeps hanging around Britt Baker. I think it's inevitable. Brock Benningfield. Solomonster, would Mean Gene let anyone take the mic from him like they do Shivani? I think not. No, you're right about that. Mean Gene would not stand for that shit. I can promise you that much. He would not tolerate that. Quintus Brown, $5 super chat, based on his comments about Brian on his podcast, I hope that Ric Flair is one of the judges for the match. Yeah, I briefly thought we might see a Flair cameo tonight, being in Greensboro, Sting and everything. But I'm glad we didn't. There was really no role for him on the show. Anti-M Bishop 07, $10 super chat. Happy holidays, Solemn Monster. Great show tonight. To the fan that had the Nyla Rose sign, spend more time learning tolerance and less time being a douche. Merry Christmas and all the best. Well said. Metal Michael, I'm going to give him a second shout out because he dropped a $99 bomb on me earlier. What is your favorite wrestling moment where you were in attendance? I was 3 feet from the Piper Snuka coconut incident. Piper continued selling after the cameras were gone. That shit was nuts. That's awesome. See, that's a piece of wrestling history right there that you were part of. Favorite wrestling moment that I was in attendance for. I've had a lot of favorites. I always think of the main event of WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. When Brian tapped out Batista, which shocked the hell out of me, I wouldn't have predicted Batista would be the one to lose, let alone tap out at the end of that match. But the story was so great, and everybody was so ready to see Brian win, that when he finally won, to be in a building that big, in the Superdome, not Silverdome Hogan, Superdome, when they were in the Superdome, and the place exploded. I still have some of the confetti, the gold and purple confetti that fell from the ceiling that night. It was just it was an amazing moment. It was great to go from like a moment of shock when Brock beat The Undertaker to that moment of elation at the end of the show and the pyro and Brian celebrating with both belts. I would have to have that pretty high up on my list. I mean, I was at a lot of really fun Attitude Era Raws where Austin would come out, the glass would shatter, and every Steve Austin entrance was fucking great. I'm trying to think if there's any other single moment that stands out to me. I'm sure there have been a whole bunch of them, but I kind of go back to the Brian one at WrestleMania 30. That may be it. I will say WrestleMania 35, Kofi Kingston. When Kofi Kingston won the title from Brian, that was a special moment. That was a special moment. I'm trying to think of other match. Well, actually, you know what? I'll end with this one, because this is one of my favorite matches in the last 20 years. And I was very fortunate to be in the building for this. I was in the building for the first NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. At the Barclays Center. Oh, Armed Anderson. I have to put my hands up. I don't want him to think I'm reaching for my piece here. I was in the building for that NXT TakeOver show for Sasha Banks against Bayley. And I had no idea coming into it that it was going to be, you know, as great as it was. And when it was over, I just thought, that's the greatest women's match I've ever seen in my life. And I still say to this day, it is the greatest women's wrestling match I've ever seen in my life. But the story they told with Bayley being bullied for so long by Sasha, and then finally, you know, they have the match and Bayley wins, and just fucking great. Fucking great. So it's probably either that or the Bryan moment of WrestleMania 30. EJ Slemp, judges in wrestling can work. Tyler Black against Austin Aries for the Ring of Honor title in 2010. Had three judges, Cornette, Roddy, and Kenny King, and that match was great. See, I knew I was... I'm going to forget so many moments now. Paul Heyman and Jared, yeah, they just pointed out to me I was in the building for the Dolph Ziggler Money in the Bank cash-in on Raw the night after WrestleMania 29. The building literally shook. When Dolph won the title, like, I'll go back and I'll watch the handheld video I recorded that night. And I think part of it was just me standing up, but you could see everybody rose to their feet, and being in the building that night, you could feel the actual foundation of the building, the Izod Center, rumble. That is still the greatest Money in the Bank cash-in. And what's funny is I was actually in the building for the Rollins cash-in. And the Rollins cash-in is number one. Hard to beat that. Winning the title in the main event of WrestleMania like that. I was in the building for both. The two best Money in the Bank cash-ins. I was there live for it. And the reaction both times was just fucking amazing. So I've been very fortunate to be part of a lot of really fun wrestling moments in the building for them over the years. Tuxedo T Servo, channel member for 5 months. King Kong Bundy would be very proud. 5. Happy holidays, he says to you and everybody else. See you next Wednesday night. Who we got? We got Joseph Brooks, $4.99. Which match do you think would have benefited more or made the match better if it was a double retirement? Sting against The Undertaker or Rock against Steve Austin at WrestleMania 19? Sting against The Undertaker. Rock had many more matches left. I mean, they made more money in one night with The Rock against John Cena in Miami in 2012 than they have for any other match they've ever done. But Sting and Undertaker, that's the idea that I pitched. That's where you got it from. I pitched the double retirement match years ago on the podcast. Once Sting came in. Talk about a missed opportunity. Dan Richards, $5 super chat. That fan with the sign should have gotten a backstage pass and let nature take its course. Early present for the locker room. Flamethrower, Fluff Salisbury. If they really want to anger the crowd, make Cody a judge for the Paige Danielson match. Joseph Brooks. Do you think it would hurt to let Sting have a token run with a championship just as long as it is not the world championship? I don't think Sting needs a title. No. I enjoy watching Sting, you know, in matches like tonight, every now and then. Sting doesn't need a belt. Zombified Guitarist. Channel member for 2 months. Where's the other replica belt from the wall behind you? It's off camera. It's to the right. Couldn't fit. Can't put baby in a box. Had to put the eagle in its own box. So we got the winged eagle right there. We got my favorite belt right over my shoulder. Stephen Chapp, again, thank you for that 50 bomb. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Dried chicken without flavor. Just got done watching AEW Holiday Bash on DVR. Battle of the Belts is a one-hour show. That don't work for me, brother. I will watch Wrestle Kingdom 16, Night 3. Wrestle Kingdom is on the same night. Well, Wrestle Kingdom 16, I guess with the time difference, it'll be early that morning on the East Coast. Yeah, there are 3 days of Wrestle Kingdom this year. Frost, did you send it earlier? Are you being silly or did I actually miss it? Let me check and make sure I didn't miss Frost's message. We don't want that to happen. Nope, not here. Trying to get one over on me? I don't see anything. So put it in the chat and I will answer your question in the chat. But let's go to Steve. Let's go to Dry Chicken. Just got done watching Dynamite Holiday. Oh, I just read that. I'm giving him two reads. I didn't give Frost one. I gave him two. Jared, thank you again for the 25. Paul Heyman with the $5 super chat. I know how much Solomonster is waiting for the promo battle between CM Punk and Andrade, where CM Punk calls Andrade a less famous Del Rio. Let's not give Del Rio any play on TV. How's that? I have no interest in seeing him back on my TV. Quintus Brown, Tony Khan really has to debut those trios titles ASAP. We are going to get them next year. Emelina. $5 super chat. Hello, I've been listening for a while, but didn't subscribe until recently. Just want to say love your stream. Happy holidays. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Groovy Goose, thanks for being a sensible voice in the IWC. Chris Manson, when is that call-in show? You know I got a call. I will let you guys know. I'll post something on Twitter. I'll post something in the community section, one of those members-only posts. Because if it's a call-in show, I need people to call in. So we're going to do a pilot episode. I'm thinking maybe in the next few days. I just have to figure out which day I want to do it. It's just going to be opening the phone line, taking your calls. If you have questions, comments, you know, we'll shoot the shit for a little bit, see how it goes. And if all goes well, we'll make it a regular feature for channel members. How's that sound? But I will let you guys know, I promise. Amiibo, $10 super chat. Happy holidays, Solomonster. Would you be down for a Rollins-Owens tag team after day one? Team KO exist. The chemistry between the two gives me Edge and Jericho vibes. Well, I mean, Owens is sticking around, and it might actually make Rollins a little more interesting. So, I'm down for it. Dry Chicken Without Flavor, fill in the blank. Team blank against Team blank in a blood and guts match in 2022. Oh. I mean, why not the Elite against the Undisputed Era? Jay Bentley. Wasn't able to give much, but here is... Look, brother, you don't have to feel pressured. I appreciate you just being with us here on the stream. And I hope you join next week and the week after that and the week after that. As long as you're here... That's what matters. But thank you. I appreciate the $2. Steven, $5 super chat. If Natalya wanted to wrestle in the Owen, should WWE let her? Would AEW even want her there? I'm sure Tony Khan would probably actually be open to that, but I don't see why WWE would allow something like that. So, no, I don't see that happening. Dr. NXT Scorpio, Sting proved tonight that everybody dives in AEW. I enjoyed the show overall. Hope you and everybody have a safe holiday. KC says, do you think it's a good idea if Lashley turns face? Well, it's funny. I was going to wait until the podcast on Sunday to talk about this. It looks to me like that's where we're headed. And I actually took it one step further when I was done watching that show on Monday. Not only do I think Lashley is going babyface, I think MVP and Lashley are going to be Splitsville, and I think MVP may end up with Omos. And we may be getting Lashley against Omos at WrestleMania. That's where I think this might be going. Omos is going out on his own, him and AJ are Splitsville. Omos can't cut a promo for shit. He needs somebody to do. I bit my tongue. Let's try that again. Let's try not to scream there. He needs somebody to do the talking for. Apparently, I need somebody to do the talking for me as well. Maybe MVP can manage me here on these streams. But I think that may be where we're headed. I think MVP becomes the mouthpiece for Omos. That gives Omos a big opponent for WrestleMania. I'll talk more about this on the podcast on Sunday, but if it happens, you heard it here first. There you go. Let's see here. We got Frost757, $5 super chat. What I said was, tonight the Undisputed Era finally got called up to the main roster. Indeed they did. Thank you, Frost. Hulkling93, $5 super chat. You can add Walter to that list of great defenses. Three match of the year candidates. His match with AR Kid was good as well. War level defenses, he says. Yes. Walter did also have a very dominant, very long championship run. That's to go back to the question from earlier, the teaser I cut from the members only Q&A about who I would say in recent years has had some of the strongest single title runs. Walter would definitely be on that list as well. I put Kenny Omega on that list. I put John Cena on that list for the U.S. title stuff, but I would, and Asuka from NXT. Walter deserves recognition as well. Absolutely. Brock Benningfield says Solomonster should be the mouthpiece for Omos. Well, if they need me, they know where to find me. Uffman Entertainment, $5 super chat. The finals for the Owen Cup. Harry Smith against Brian Pillman Jr. Thoughts? I don't know. That doesn't really do it for me. Just because of the connection to the family, though. I don't mind them being in the tournament. I think that's fine. I think they could probably do better as far as a final, though. I wouldn't have Pillman in the final. Dry Chicken. I love Dan Lambert. Happy holidays, Solomonster. Jay Williams says, you can't spell Solomonster without Omos. Well, he's got a point there. Zombified Guitarist, $8 super chat in honor of Jay Bentley 19. Tis the season for giving. Look at what you've done. Jay Bentley has inspired other people to super chat. James Dean says, spoiler alert, WWE releases Solomonster. I didn't get myself one of those no-cut contracts, so I guess I deserve it. And Nick Grosso, dropping a spoiler here that some people might not want to hear, so I'll leave that out. But thank you, Nick. Oh, Nick. What are you doing, Nick? What are you doing? All right. I think we are caught up on those. Actually, we got a super chat coming in right now from our good friend, Paul Heyman. Is Daniel Bryan the first and probably only person in wrestling history to challenge for the WWE and the AEW title in the same year? I believe he would be. In the brief history of AEW and that title, I believe the answer is yes. Not only that, but he was in the WrestleMania main event. So to go from the WrestleMania main event in April to challenging for the AEW championship is quite the feat. EJ Slemp, why did WWE choose Michael Cole over Kevin Kelly years ago? What if Kelly stayed and Cole left? Would fans love Cole and hate Kelly? I think fans would have hated on Kelly just the same. I think anybody who was following in the footsteps of Jim Ross was doomed. Because Michael Cole, when left to his own devices, is not terrible. And you can point to examples of that over the years. Some of the international shows that they've done where Vince McMahon was not in his ear. The UK tournament they did back in 2017. I think it was 2017. The Beast in the East special in Japan back in 2015. Cole can be very, very good. Kevin Kelly, if he was in the Michael Cole position, would have to regurgitate the same bullshit that Vince McMahon has had Michael Cole regurgitating for the last 20 years. And I also think that because WWE, the perception is how horribly they treated Jim Ross, embarrassing him on TV and mocking him, and you know what they did to him in the draft that year, which was just ridiculous and classless on their part. The fans knew that JR was being dicked around, and then they give his spot to Michael Cole. Cole was in an impossible position here because, of course, he was going to be perceived as the guy who's taking Jim Ross's spot. Anybody in that spot, the fans would have, I think, revolted against them. So I honestly don't think it would have been any different if you would have had Kevin Kelly in that position. But thank you, EJ, for the question. And now, it is time to be the booker. Here on this holiday bash stream, we shall try to choose a very festive WrestleMania main event this week. One for the men, one for the women. We do this on every stream. We randomly book the WrestleMania main event. This right here is how WWE books their matches. So one half of the men's WrestleMania main event. We'll pretend that didn't happen. My finger slipped. One half of the WrestleMania main event is The Big Show. Look at that beard. Look at that magnificent beard. That fucking rat's nest on his face. The Big Show. Well, it's the Big Slow. Who will Big Show be wrestling in the WrestleMania main event? It will be Big Show against Big Cass. I mean, that was just a gimme right there. That was an easy one. I think we would all agree. That is a fail. So let's move on to the ladies and hope, by God, hope that we... What was this tiny super chat here? What is that? Tiny ass super chat. How did it end up that small? That shouldn't be. Anyway, let us play with the ladies here. That came out wrong. Let's play with this box, this ladies' box. Boy, I'm just... Let's move on and see what the women's WrestleMania main event is going to be. We've got Natalia, the aforementioned Natalia. Somebody just mentioned her, who is in the Guinness Book of World Records now, I believe. What was the record that she just set? Is it the greatest number of pay-per-view matches or women's matches? I don't know what it was. But anyway, who is she going to be facing at WrestleMania? Let's see. Natalia, one-on-one against Ginny. I believe that is Ginny. I believe that is Walter's better half. And Ginny, I've only seen a little bit of Ginny, but I believe Ginny is one of the more accomplished stars from NXT UK. See, I actually think Ginny and Natalia, with their experience, could probably have a pretty good match. So you know what? I'm going to allow that. I'm going to accept that. As the women's WrestleMania, we have everybody in the chat. Who is that? I could tell all you people watch NXT UK. I actually think that would be a pretty good match. So we will have Ginny and Natalia at WrestleMania. There you go. Mario DeRose, $4.99 Super Chat. Buy or sell 9 or 11 as the worst WrestleMania. 11. I have a soft spot for 9. Dry chicken, buy, sell, or rent. Vince McMahon, golden egg. Tony Khan shouting 9 days. Or Vic Joseph's, ooh! What kind of question is this? I'll buy on the 9 days of Tony Khan's Coke binge. I will rent the Golden Egg, because at least the Golden Egg was pretty much a 1 week thing. And I will sell on Vic Joseph's, ooh, like he's having fucking gas pains. Because he does that every week. Nayef Al-Safar, thank you for the $9.99. And Wiz Blue says, happy holidays, Solomonster. Thank you, Wiz Blue. I hope you have a very enjoyable holiday yourself. I am enjoying the festive atmosphere here. The one time a year we get to be very festive with the lights and the snow and a little Santa hat there. So I am enjoying hanging out with you guys. It's been a lot of fun tonight. Alberto Ortiz says, happy Festivus. I see I should have put a Festivus poll. Damn it. Well, we'll pretend that there is a Festivus poll in here as well. Epsilon Sama actually has a great point. He goes, I sell the Golden Egg. It's $100 million. I forgot about that. That's right. The $100 million egg. I would sell that fucking thing too. Dr. NXT Scorpio. Thank God Vince and Bruce don't know about NXT UK. Yeah, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist to them. Hulkling 93. The jackhammer into the diamond cutter is a top finisher counter. That's a great one, too. In fact, they just showed that on the network, on the Broken Skull Sessions. The latest one with Diamond Dallas Page. And they showed the highlights of their Halloween Havoc match, and that was a great counter. In fact, I think Dallas should have won the title off that counter. He should have won the title off that counter. I would have had him be the one to take the title from Goldberg. He was over. DDP was over. Back in 98. What is Festivus, says Maz. You gotta watch Seinfeld. How are you not all 180 episodes of Seinfeld are on Netflix now. You have no reason not to catch up on Seinfeld. I promise you, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to thank me later. Like Zombified Guitarist says, $2 Super Chat, it is a Festivus for the rest of us. Merry Festivus, everybody. Juan Ocampo, $4.99 Super Chat. Want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas to everybody in the chat and to you. All I want for Christmas is an Orton pose, an Orton pose, an Orton pose. What, it's like the Orton douche pose, right? You just kind of like that, you know? We don't have the sparklers behind me. It doesn't really work. There's your Orton pose. Jeremiah, he's doing well, and so am I. Thank you for asking. That's very nice of you. Original project. Beavis rocks out. Every time there's any kind of like a message from a member, it says they just became a member. Original project has been a member for 4 months. Happy Christmas, Solo. Happy to be a member. Hope you stay blessed. Thank you very much. Joey says, I know what Festivus is, and I only watch 40% of the episodes. So, talking about Seinfeld. I answered a question about that, actually, in the members only video yesterday. They asked me, what's my favorite Seinfeld episode? And, I mean, the contest is obviously a classic, but I said either the Chinese restaurant or the marine biologist. And to think, the Chinese restaurant episode, the executives at NBC didn't get it. They went to Larry David and said, are you out of your mind? You can't do an episode like this. Well, they didn't say you can't do it, but they were... They thought that it was the dumbest idea they'd ever heard. And thankfully, they did it anyway. And I think it's maybe the best episode of the entire series. Because everybody has gone through that before. Waiting and waiting and waiting in a restaurant. And people going ahead of you. Hey, wait, I was here before them. And then finally, you get sick and tired and you leave. And then when you leave, they call your name. A lot of that stuff was relatable. That's why it's so good. Uffman Entertainment channel member for 9 months. He's a sound-off legend. Apparently, Vince does love firing people during the holidays. Yeah, I caught that line, too, on Monday. And, you know, all the people, they're gonna chalk it up to, oh, he's just being a heel. You know, all the WWE bootlickers. Now, he's a fucking asshole. That's what he is. No soup for you, the soup Nazi, of course. How can I forget the soup Nazi? Nayef Alsafar, channel member for 10 months. Hey, Solomonster, Turkey is here. You're awesome. Ah, son Turkey. I hope Turkey is doing well. I hope Turkey has a very happy new year as well. I hope you are both doing well. Steve Heredia, $12 super chat. Should be popping up here any second. Out of the four, oh, there it is. There's the Shayna Baszler super chat as she gazes into my blue eyes. Out of the four AEW pay-per-views, which of them will be the first to get a stadium show? That's a very good question. So out of Revolution, Double or Nothing, All Out, or Full Gear, I would say if one of them were going to get a stadium show, I think it would be All Out. I think it would be All Out. And it's not going to be next year, but I do think it would probably be All Out. Just because I don't think you're going to be doing a stadium show for a wrestling event in November. And I think Double or Nothing they should keep in Vegas. Now, I mean, I guess there's a new stadium in Vegas, right? But I'm going to say All Out would be my guess. Jamin John, best match between Rock and Jericho, No Mercy 2001 or Royal Rumble 2002? I think No Mercy 01 for me. Zombified Guitarist, have you ever watched The Thrill Seekers Rock America on YouTube? All I want now is more wrestlers about town montages set to 80s music. I did watch the Thrill Seekers video years ago. It's been a long time since I've seen it. It is so cheesy. It's the perfect amount of 80s cheese, though. Like, that video back then worked. It's like Zubaz pants. You had to be there. Today, I don't know that would really work. Maybe some people could pull it off. But yes, those videos are very, very corny. Yeah, Ed, I mean, again, that's part of it. You know, All Out, Labor Day weekend, you're almost guaranteed, depending on where you're doing it, to probably have really good weather. I also look at All Out. I feel like All Out is kind of their big show of the year. I think that they probably look at it as their... maybe they're WrestleMania, so that would be the one that would make the most sense, I think, to have in a big stadium. Dry chicken without flavor, sliced ham or sliced turkey? Happy holidays. I like both, but I'm a sliced turkey guy. I have turkey way more than I have ham. In fact, I had some turkey with lunch today. So I would go sliced turkey. AEW would have to sell 70,000 plus tickets to sell out the Vegas stadium. Could they do it? I don't think so. You know, one day maybe, but no. 70 is a tall climb. 30 in the right venue, in the right city, I think they could probably do it. 70, I don't see that happening yet. Frost, did Solomonster ever listen to Tiffany? Back in the day, I think we're alone now. Of course. I mean, that's the only song of hers I know, but yes, I listen to Tiffany on occasion. Beowulf says, I'm old enough to remember the Thrill Seekers, and those videos were corny even back then. I thought they were geeks at first, but then they could go in the ring, and I changed my mind on them. What is my favorite wrestling territory of the 80s? Georgia, World Class, Houston, Southwest, Mid-Atlantic, or Mid-South? You know, in the 80s, I was so young, I wasn't watching any of them. I have since watched some of those territories that you just listed. I wouldn't say world class. Mid-South was really good. But also Mid-Atlantic. I might go Mid-Atlantic. I feel like I've watched more Mid-Atlantic than anything else when it comes to a lot of that territory stuff. Mid-South was great, but I think I might have to go with Mid-Atlantic. And Debbie Gibson, of course. Jared, of course. EJ, what was the largest show in WCW history? Probably one of the Georgia Dome shows that they did. And they ran the Georgia Dome at least twice. I think both for Nitros. And they had about 40,000 both times. So that, I believe, would have been their biggest. Unless, of course, you count the collision in Korea, which, I mean, I don't count that. That wasn't really a WCW show anyway. Where the fuck I am with the $4.99 super chat. Hey, man, what's up? Remember, I told you about my tryout along with my boy, ENA, who got signed from here at Level Up. He is now Idris Enofe. Oh, wow. Okay, I did not know that. In NXT 2.0. That's very cool. That is very cool. Well, congrats to him. He's already made a couple of appearances on TV. He looks in tremendous shape. You know, I mean, he looks great. I hope they give him a real opportunity. You never know with that company. But I wish him all the best. That's awesome. That's really cool. Tokyo Dome would be a decent choice for AEW. Yeah, Tokyo Dome's a big building, though. You want to sell out the Tokyo Dome, you're looking at 60,000 somewhere for wrestling, probably around that. New Japan can't get that. You think AEW is going to get that? Now, the UK is interesting because AEW has not run a UK show yet. They would have by now were it not for this fucking pandemic shit. And I know Tony Khan wants to go there next year. And if they make it there, he's talked about Craven Cottage, which I want to say they could probably get in the range of 20,000 in that stadium, in that venue. But I think if you were to run a bigger stadium in the UK and shoot for 30 or 40,000, because AEW, I think, is pretty popular over there, I would say, you know, as rabid as that UK fan base is, I would think they have a shot if they ever, you know, try that. Japan, I don't see it. UK, I think they could put somewhere around there in a stadium. I think they could do it. Where the fuck I am? Dropping another $4.99. Yes, so now with Dom and ENA, I have two homies on TV, and here I am still sweeping the ring after practice. Fuck I gotta do to get in better shape. You'll do just fine. Your time will come. Yeah, we've talked about that before, and again, Dominic, you know, we talk about Hook and how good he looked in that first match, and I think Hook is going to be, you know, one of those big young rising stars in AEW. But I've always praised Dominic. I mean, Dominic also is someone who doesn't have a whole lot of experience as far as from the moment he started formal training, I think, to where he is today. But even when he was in the ring the first time with Seth Rollins at SummerSlam, you know, he looked really good. And Dominic is another one. In 5 years, you know, he'll be twice as good as he is now, and I think he'll be somebody to watch for, just like Hook and just like a lot of these other young stars in AEW. But, I mean, Dominic comes from a wrestling family, so I'm sure to some degree his father was probably training him and he was doing moves since he was a little kid. It just hits differently, I think, when you're second or third generation. But, no, I give Dominic his props, too. TIAA Stadium in Jacksonville holds 67,000 for a football game but can expand to 80,000. Again, these are numbers that I just don't see for AEW. Again, AEW is still a very young company. AEW has only been in business full-time for... Has it even been a full 3 years yet? I don't even think it's been a full 3 years. We're going on 3 years. I don't see those numbers being realistic for any time in the next couple of years. But if the company continues to grow and, you know, they get another big TV contract in a few years and they stick around for a while, I think they may get there yet. But these numbers, 60, 80,000, it's ridiculous. AEW is not putting anywhere close to that in a stadium anytime soon. I think we need to be realistic about this. Well, you know, Ed, it's funny you mentioned that about Dominic and wanting to put him in a mask, because he's talked about eventually he wants to be in a mask, you know, as basically Rey Mysterio Jr. Like, he wants that. That's in his mind where he's going to eventually go. So you'll probably get Dominic in a mask at some point. You know, you can't see the thing is, and Ed, I get your point. You know, he says 70 to 80K is 10% of what their TV audience is. That's true, but you're not going to get the majority of your TV audience to congregate in one place and buy tickets and fly in, depending on where it is. They may have 900,000 or a million people, you know, with DVR, it's probably over a million people a week watching Dynamite. I still don't think that they're going to get 60,000 people in one place for a stadium show in 2022 or 2023. And let's forget the COVID stuff. Let's say everything is fine. They're going to pack what they want to pack a stadium 2022, 2023, you know, anything over 50K. I don't see it. Under that, I think, yeah, they have a shot. Over 50K, I just think that's being a little too ambitious. Zombified Guitarist says, send AEW to North Korea. They'll break 100,000. Well, there you go. You want to get 150,000, you go to North Korea. There you go. North Korea is not letting anybody in because of COVID. They want like zero COVID. And so I guess they think that's going to work for them. Of course, it's not. But they're a weird country to begin with. B-Boy deserves most of the credit for training Dominic and Idris. So shout out to B-Boy. Can AEW even do 10 to 15,000 consistently? Yeah, I think they've proven that they can. It depends on the market. They're not doing it every week. I mean, what do you mean by consistently? Every single week? WWE can't even do that every single week. You think AEW is going to do that every single week? I mean, let's be honest. There are WWE TV tapings now where they're lucky to get 5,000 people in the building. You will literally have an entire side of the arena that is closed off. They won't even open it up to ticket sales because they know they can't sell tickets. If WWE can't do it, then AEW is not doing it. I mean, AEW outsold them at the UBS Arena by a few thousand tickets. But there is no wrestling company anywhere in the world right now that is consistently on a week-to-week basis doing crowds of 10 to 15,000 people. It just doesn't happen anymore. But they have done 10,000 plus enough that I think they've proven that, yes, they can do that. Did they have a Mr. Arcade in Brooklyn back in the day? If they did, I never went. I've never heard of that before. Brooklyn's a big place. We got 2 million people in Brooklyn alone. There are parts of Brooklyn that I've never been to, and I've lived here my whole life. So maybe Mr. Arcade was in a different part of Brooklyn that I never ventured out to. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, or sell on who do you think should have and was more deserving of a Royal Rumble win, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, or CM Punk? That's a good question. I would go Angle or Punk. And me, personally, who do I think should have had at least one Royal Rumble victory? You know, as hot as he got there for a while, I feel like it should have been Punk. Getting that big... As a babyface, getting that big babyface Rumble win, going on and getting his WrestleMania main event. But it was not to be. But I would have been fine with Angle or Punk winning a Rumble match. Buck Showalter coming to our Mets. Yes. Something to be excited about. Now they just have to end this lockout. So there's actually baseball to be played in a few months. All right, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I want to thank you all for hanging out with me tonight on this holiday stream. All the super chats, all the non-super chat questions I've been answering in the chat, just kind of hanging out here. We can check the poll one more time here before we head out. 90 up, 9 down. That is the sign of a great show. So if you join late and you're wondering if tonight's Dynamite was worth a watch, there's your answer right there. I would concur. I had fun watching the show tonight, so you will too, especially that main event. Had a lot of fun watching that main event. As you see on your screen, do hit that sub button if you are not subscribed to the channel and give this video a thumbs up on your way out. We still have super chats coming in. Look at this. Look at Jay Baker. $4.99. Adam Cole and Mandy Rose forgot their tans this week. Merry Christmas. You know, it's funny you mention that because I noticed it with Adam Cole. Now that you mention it, I didn't say anything about it, but Adam Cole was looking a little pale. He was looking a little peaked tonight. A little Sheamus-esque. He forgot the spray tan. But it's December, so that's okay. KC thinks Randy Savage should have won a Royal Rumble. Well, there was one year where he was in the Rumble and he never came out. He was afraid the Ultimate Warrior might get him. He never, like, they called his number and he never showed. That could have been the year he would have won. So it's his own fault. If you missed it earlier, I will not be streaming on Friday. SmackDown is a taped show with 3 matches, and it's Christmas Eve, and I'm taking the night off. So, no stream Friday. Rampage airs on Saturday this week with a TNT title match. I'm going to wait and talk about it on the Sunday show, so I will be back live with you next Wednesday. That will be the final Dynamite stream of 2021. So if you have been with me throughout this year, then you need to be with me for the final stream of the year. We got to send this out on a high note. And then I'm going to be live on New Year's Eve. So 2 nights later, the final day of the year. We did a New Year's Eve stream last year. We had a lot of fun. I got to spend my New Year's with you guys. We'll do it again. Come hang out. I don't even know if there's any wrestling that night. It's a Friday night. I don't know if there's going to be a Rampage. I know there's no SmackDown that night. So we'll probably just do questions and hang out. So that'll be next week. And we'll put a nice big bow on this year. Dry Chicken says, buy, sell, or rent TNA EC3, WWE EC3, or Ring of Honor EC3. That might be the easiest question I've gotten all night. TNA EC3. He has not been the same since. TNA EC3 is Dixie's nephew and all the interaction with Rockstar Spud. They could have replicated that in WWE, but no. No. They know better. They know better than everybody else. And Ed, I will let you know. If you are a channel member, I will let you guys know when the call-in show pilot is going to go live, because I'll have to put the phone number up. You know, I'm almost thinking maybe instead of doing a SmackDown thing, maybe we would do it on Friday night. But if we don't do it on Christmas Eve, it'll be sometime early next week. I will let you guys know. So just follow me on social media. I'll keep you guys posted. Brock says, I'll probably be hanging with you guys for this new year. Probably? No. There's no probably here. You will be. You will be here. I'm going to be taking mandatory attendance, so you better be here to ring in the new year with me. All right, be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a very Merry Christmas. If you are celebrating this weekend with the tree and the gifts and the stockings and the cookies and gingerbread men or Chinese food, if you're like me. And I will see you for episode 736 on Sunday. And of course, the final Dynamite New Year smash coming up next Wednesday. Boy, you guys really don't want me to leave. Marcus the Entertainer, member for 3 months. Shout out to Marcus. Bigger match, MJF against CM Punk, UE against the Elite, or Danielson Page 3? I think MJF and Punk. Of those three, MJF and Punk, I think, is the biggest match. So there you go. There's your answer. Good night.